And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
Hello! Today is Wednesday, June 14th. We are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Gino. I'm here with Kevin. I'm here with Darren. Listen to us anywhere you get your podcast. Please like and subscribe. Follow us on Facebook. Talk to us. We want to talk to you. We're going to talk some sports. This is what we're calling the Champions Week. That's right. We got champions everywhere in one week. It was a crazy week. The Denver Nuggets in the NBA, the Las Vegas Knights in the NHL, Arcangelo at the Belmont, Manchester City in the Champions League, Djokovic at the French Open, and Nick Taylor at the RBC Canadian Open. It's a champions-packed week. Guys, we're going to get it going with some NBA. Denver winds up winning in five games to take the championship. Jokic averages 30-14-7 in the finals. He is the MVP. The Denver Nuggets are champions. Kev?
Deservedly so for Jokic. I'm getting my sports confused. Jokic, I mean, the entire playoffs, 30 points a game, 13.5 rebounds, 9.5 assists over the entire playoffs, 10 triple-doubles in 20 games. Nuggets win their first title in their first finals appearance. Game four, they won very easily. Took control in the third quarter, never threatened in the fourth. No problem there. Game five was interesting, very interesting game. Heat had the lead at the half. They still had a one-point lead after the third. Nuggets actually came out strong in the fourth, had an 83-76 lead with 4:43 left. The Heat went on a 13-5 run, all by Jimmy Butler. And you're thinking, okay, here's Butler's got one-man team, going to come back and maybe keep the series alive. But then Brown had the offensive rebound, the putback for the lead, a couple misses back and forth, and Butler gets inside, commits a key turnover, Caldwell Pope makes the steal, a couple free throws. Butler misses a three. Brown makes a couple of three throws, and all of a sudden, Nuggets are up by five, and they win by five. Despite shooting 17.9% from three-point range, 5 for 28, 56% from free throw line, 13 for 23. I mean, Denver played about as bad as they could in that game, shooting-wise, and they still were able to pull it off, win by five, win their first title. And Jokic, yeah, didn't win the regular season MVP for a change, but came through, won the finals MVP. I'm sure he'll take that over the regular season MVPs. He's a champion. The Nuggets are a champion. Congrats to them.
Yeah, Denver was clearly the better team, guys. I mean, Miami did what they could to minimize Jokic in trying to make him not a distributor, right? And we talked about it last week. Held them to four assists each the last two games, right? Which was huge. The only way to keep them a shot, right? But here's the problem. Denver comes out. They have Porter, who's 6'10", and they have Howard, who's 6'9". And Miami does – not Howard. I'm sorry. They have Gordon. I'm sorry, who's 6'9". Gordon comes out in game four and has his game, all right? Gordon
he played great in game four.
He was dominant, and Brown off the bench was excellent too, right?
Yep.
Then game five comes back, and Porter has a strong game. Not as good as Gordon did in four, but he still put up 17. He's 6'10", and he's playing a wing position. Miami's just too small for it. They're too small to cover Jokic, let alone cover these two guys. And Jamal wasn't great in the last two games, but he did hit big shots when he needed to. You know, the better team won. If it wasn't for one major fourth quarter comeback by Miami in game two, we were looking at another sweep. And I'm not trying to take it away. Miami came back. They earned that game. Fact is that the Denver won it, and they're kind of built for the long haul. And they're kind of built. They're young. They're good. They're big. They have players on their bench that would probably get minutes on other teams. I mean, they're only going to get stronger, I think. So it's definitely you know, it's definitely a team that could start a dynasty here. And they're a little bit more fun right now to watch than the Golden State teams with Steph to me and the LeBron teams and all that. I mean, there's nobody on this team that's hard to root for at this point. It could turn, but there's nobody on this team that's hard to root for. I never liked Draymond Green on Golden State. I never liked, LeBron. This team doesn't have anybody. G?
And, you know, there is some room for improvement. You can see them adding a couple of pieces that could make them a little stronger. I think they probably need another center just to give when Jokic takes that, you know, those 4 minutes off every once in a while. There's a couple of bench play. You know, they have some pieces they can add. And, I mean, I'm not 100% sure, but I really don't think they have a lot of anybody big free agent-wise. Right? So, I mean,
everybody's under contract here.
Everybody's under contract then. Yeah, no, they're fine.
Yeah. Kev?
Yeah, the only thing I want to say is, you know, I want to stop everybody talking about the imbalance in Major League Baseball. There is no league more imbalanced than the NBA when it comes to championships. You know, the Nuggets won their first. There are still 10 teams looking for their first title, including a couple that have been around forever. You know, the Clippers, the Pacers, the Nets. You know, these are teams that have been around for a while, not just the expansion teams. You've got 9 of the franchises with just one win. Celtics and Lakers, as we know, they've got 17 each. They're at 45% of the titles are between two teams. Enough with, you know, complaining about baseball. Oh, only the rich can win. We've had how many different champions in the last 20 years in baseball? The Yankees haven't won. The Yankees haven't won since 2007. The Mets haven't won since 1986. I mean, you talk about big spenders. You know,
2009. Don't downplay us.
2009. I'm sorry.
But Kev, the difference is that in baseball, you can point to the money as the key factor to these teams playing really well, whereas in basketball, it's if you got the big guy. If you got one of these huge players, you know, Bird and Magic and Kareem and Jordan, you know, your Kobe, Shaq, LeBron, your odds on winning the title are skyrocket up the charts because you got these big guys.
I mean, the one thing, and my daughter's screaming in the background, I apologize. But the one thing that I'd say, though, also is that in baseball, Tampa Bay is always competitive. They don't have a payroll. You know, they never have. In basketball, now guys just want to play with their friends. So it depends on what city they decide to go to, whether it be Brooklyn, whether it be the next being be Chicago or Denver or L.A. or wherever. It's become a whole thing where superstars have to play with one another.
Tampa now, even though they never really had great success in the playoffs. You had the Moneyball A's. The Twins were always in the playoffs with the low payroll. I mean, you've had other teams, you know, that at least have a chance to get there.
But don't you think in the NBA, the stars are the ones that drive this as opposed to maybe
it's all
buddies?
It's a star-driven league. That's all it is. Who wants to play with the buddies? And I think that's why I like Denver a little bit more this year, is the fact that, you know, this was a team that was put together, not by Jokic. This was a team put together by the Denver Nuggets front office. And built as a team, not as a collection of superstars.
I agree.
Okay.
They're still likable. They can turn in 3 years if they keep winning, but right now they're still a likable group.
Yep.
NBA draft next week. Anything else you guys want to bring up on NBA before we move on?
So there's one player who apparently is looking to be traded, Bradley Beal. Looks like the Wizards are going to try to accommodate the trade. So my son, who's a big Celtics fan, was arguing with his cousin, my nephew. And my nephew sent a trade. Oh, I've got the trade. Bradley Beal for Jaylen Brown straight up. And my son is a Celtics fan, said, "You're nuts. You're crazy. That's a downgrade for the Celtics."
I disagree.
Wow.
So first off,
I don't think Brown's nearly as good a player as Beal.
Wait, first off, does the money balance?
Just straight up one for one. I mean, we're not talking money. I mean, they didn't spend the time looking at salary caps and everything else. They're just looking at pure player, one for one, Beal for Brown. And my son feels like Brown's a far better defender than Beal. Brown had a terrible playoffs, but, you know, Brown has put up better numbers than Beal. Beal has had really nobody to play with, so he should be putting up the numbers on a garbage team. Brown's had Tatum with him, so either number one, he loses some points to Tatum, or number two, the fact that defense is focused probably more on Tatum, maybe that frees up Brown to get more points, and Beal is the attention for the Wizards.
The fact that you said the word probably is a joke. Tatum gets the better defender. It's not a debate. It's not like, oh, who are we going to go after? It's a joke. Secondly, Brown in a big spot is a walking turnover. I'm sorry. The guy makes 7, 8, 9 turnovers a game in big games. I don't know how anybody that roots for the Celtics can think Brown's a player. He's not. He puts up garbage points against garbage teams, and in big games, he's crap. I would take my shot with Beal. Crap.
Wow. Crap. Gino.
I think if the money is matching and it's a one-for-one trade, if I'm the Celtics, I think I make the trade.
Wow.
I don't know.
That's my son this then.
I don't know if
you disagree with it, Kev. You disagree with it too.
But Kev, it may not be the overall ability of the player. For me, I'm looking at it, I think the Celtics need a change.
Yeah.
I think the core group that they have needs a change. And if you're going to make the change and you know Brown's going to be a free agent in a year, and you may at that point, then you may not bring him back anyway. At least here, you're changing up the dynamic a little bit. You bring Beal in. You don't have to worry about this Brown contract coming down.
Yep.
If I'm the Celtics, I'm making that trade.
Watching the end of the game, just I'm sorry, Kev.
No,
watching the end of the series where they lost. To Miami, the end of games, the only guy that wanted the shot was Smart.
Yeah.
Okay. Brown is not the assassin Beal is. I get how Brown's a very likable player and he plays good defense and he does all the things right. And he's really a contributor and all that type of stuff. He's not an assassin. He's not a guy that wants to take that shot. He just doesn't. And I think Tatum's a little overrated. I think Brown's a lot overrated. I think they put up nice numbers. The fact that Smart is taking these shots and he can't shoot blows my mind that the other two guys aren't demanding that shot in the huddle. They're not demanding it. That's what I think Beal would demand it because I think he's been doing it long enough. I think he's had it with John Wall and he's had other guys he's played with, and it's always been him. I think that he gives you the killer in the fourth quarter that this team hasn't shown. I mean, you saw Tatum disappear for minutes at a time.
Yep.
Brown's a walking turnover, 7, 8 turnovers in a big game. I don't understand the love affair.
I think Boston needs a change. And as we know, I think it's Brown after this year, Tatum after next year are free agents. Both are eligible for Supermax contracts, and you can't sign both of them to Supermax. You got to handcuff your roster for too many years, having two top guys and nothing else.
I think especially with the changes that are coming to the cap, Kev.
Yeah. I think this offseason is an offseason to explore trades for Jaylen Brown. I think the Celtics could get a lot for Jaylen Brown. I just think there's better offers out there probably than just Beal.
Here's my question. If you traded for Jaylen Brown, would you consider him to be a number one? Go-to number one?
No.
Do you consider Bradley Beal to be a go-to number one?
At this point, no.
I think he's closer than Brown.
Okay.
I'm just saying, I just think Beal has a little bit of swagger that Brown doesn't.
Beal 5 years ago, yes.
I think Beal's a little long. I think five's a little long.
Beal's going to be 30 now, and Brown's going to be 25.
I'm not disagreeing. So
that plays in some of my thinking, too.
Well, I mean, to me, 30 isn't old. To me, 34, 35 is old. 30, I think you're still got a good 4 or 5 years left. Yeah. I mean, Brown's been in the league a while, and he's a good player. I don't consider him a great player. I know I'm the only one of the three of us that feels that way. I just think he turns the ball over too much in spots and never wants to take the shot.
And that was my nephew's.
That's supposed to be a star.
And it's funny. That was my nephew's argument, was the fact that he's terrible at ball control.
He's awful. He's the walking turnover.
All right. I mean, I'll tell Kevin.
But he's better.
I'll tell my son. The Sports Canes have ruled it is a good trade for the Celtics.
I think Gino's point is probably a little bit more realistic than mine. Mine is an opinion. Gino's is a fact. They might just need a change.
Yep.
Mine is more of I actually think Beal is more of a guy that wants to take the winning shot. That's my difference. Brown's a better defender. I do agree.
Yep.
Okay, so we'll move on to the NHL, where we had another champion, the Las Vegas Knights, take care of the Florida Panthers in five games. Game five, they wound up winning 9-3. It was 6-2 after two, 6-1 after two. Mark Stone had a hat trick. The Conn Smythe Trophy winner was Jonathan Marchessault. It was a little bit of a crazy series because Vegas kind of took over as much as they could in as many games as they could. Game three was close. Game four was close. But the other games, they kind of blew them out. Kevin, what do you got to say about Las Vegas?
I think on our picks, I was the only one to pick Vegas.
How far did you have it going, Kev?
Seven, though.
There you go. Shut up.
We all thought
it was going to be a series. We all had it going seven. We were all
we all thought it was going to be a series. My goodness. Yeah, the key game was game four, obviously.
And we all also had Denver in five, by the way.
Oh, yeah, we all hit that.
Not that that was hard, but we all got it.
Yeah, I mean, game four was the key game. After scoring late in the third period by Tkachuk, after getting the overtime goal by, I'm going to butcher his name like I do every other name, Verhage.
Close enough, Kev.
You know, you would think Florida would have come out in game four with a little bit more energy, a little bit more pep. And Vegas got up 3-0, held on for the 3-2 win in game four, set it up for them to come home and just absolutely annihilate the Panthers in game five. It was never a contest. Halfway through the second period, it was close. They scored, four goals in the second half of the second period, 6-1, coasted to the win. Not much to talk about in the series. It was a lot easier than any of us thought.
But you are the one that picked them. Here's the thing.
Florida, it's one of the few ones I got.
Funniest part was Florida came so close to tying that game up in the final seconds of game four, which could have turned the entire series around. Tkachuk had a chance in front of the net, and he just didn't lift the puck. He got nil. He'll made the save. He got him in the pan. If he lifts it there, they're going to overtime, and who the hell knows? Coming back from 3-0 to go to 3-3. Hockey overtime, anything can happen, though. It really just wasn't much. And then once Tkachuk wasn't going to play in game five, he's got a heart and soul of that team. Yeah. I just felt like it was pretty much over. Florida came out okay, and then all of a sudden the shorthanded goal, and it was a weird one. Stone just stood there, like four or five times, and then just lifted it up to the top of the net. I don't think I've ever seen a player with that much time ever in my life. That's how far ahead they were on that. Aiden Hill, once again, was amazing. Jonathan, much or so, was great. Mark Stone, everybody seems to hate him on the other teams, so he must be doing something right. Even in the game they won, Vegas controlled every game of the series. Florida had to come back in that one. I mean, really, Vegas controlled every single game of the series. I don't think it was really ever that close. Jake?
One other thing to note, and that is the Las Vegas Knights have made the playoffs five of their first six seasons.
Yeah.
When they put those rosters together originally, no one looked at it that this was going to be any kind of powerhouse team in the NHL, but they made the playoffs five times. They've been to the finals twice. They now have a Stanley Cup under their belt. It's been a hell of a little run here for them, let me tell you.
Yep.
There's a lot of teams in the NHL wish they had a six-year run like this, let me tell you right now.
I don't think my Calgary Flames ever have, so there you go.
One other interesting note in the NHL, Kevin?
Peter Laviolette finally announced as the New York Rangers head coach. Laviolette continuing his tour of the Metropolitan Division. This is now the fifth team he'll coach in the division out of eight. Previous stops with Carolina, the Islanders, Philadelphia, and Washington. This one hurts because the Islanders were his first job. I love the job he did. I thought he got a raw deal after 2 years and let them go. And he's bounced around a bit. He's won a cup with Carolina in 06, made the finals with Philly and Nashville, eighth winningest head coach of all time, number one all time among American-born coaches. The Rangers have themselves a great coach. And if he can get anything out of this team, boy, the Rangers are set up. I mean, they were so close last year. I think they've got a real good chance next year getting there.
And he's a likable guy. And that's part of the reason why when he coached the Islanders, he's a likable guy.
I know.
He's good in interviews. He's always got that smile on his face, Darren.
His teams play hard.
Yeah.
They're gritty. They check. They're a fan's team. Fan likes the way that he gets his team to play.
Yep.
They play physical. They play skilled, but they play physical. They're a little nasty. They have a little bit of an old school kind of feel. And before we forget, because I know everybody out there is really nervous about this, Ryan Huska, hired by the Calgary Flames as our new head coach, replacing
Murray. I have a question.
Yes.
Who?
He was an assistant coach for us. I don't want to hear it. Okay. And listen, this could be the guy that gives us our first cup since 1989, which is more recent than I would say the Islanders.
Yes, they are.
Okay, and on that note, we're going to
move to our fan.
we're going to move to horse racing at the Belmont. Arcangelo wound up winning the 155th Belmont Stakes. He paid $17.80 on the win on the $2 on the $1 bet. Exacta was $68. Forte finished 2. Tappet Trice 3, and then the dead heat for 4, which you don't see. Hit Show and Angel of Empire. Darren, talk to me about the Belmont Stakes.
Well, it was a good pace, which made it hard for the Preakness win a National Treasure to kind of go wire to wire. I mean, you know, at the half, they were inside 48. When you see that in a race that long on a track that big, running that mile and a half, you know he's not going to hold it. Arcangelo, you know, great run. Happy for Jenna. Antonucci, happy for Castellano winning his first. He's a guy that's been an amazing jockey, did so many years at Belmont, has been dominant. Never won the Belmont before. I didn't know that. He has obviously won other stakes races. He's won the Derby. He's won the Preakness. He was very excited about the Belmont.
Well, he got 2/3 of the Triple Crown this year.
Yeah, he did. Absolutely. Castellano did a great job. You know, Jenna, again, first female trainer ever to win a Triple Crown race. So you got to give it to her. And I thought Castellano had a brilliant ride. I really did. I think he did everything right. Cut that corner really well. The other horses were all right on top of each other. If it wasn't that great, we would have had a great finish. Instead, we had a great second place run between Forte, Tappet Trice, Angel of Empire, and Hit Show.
Where was Forte about halfway through that race? Because all of a sudden, out of nowhere, he's coming up the outside.
He was sitting six. I think it was six.
He was under the whip very early in that race. They knew he didn't have it. He was under the whip before any other horse was under the whip. He was under the whip on the far turn. It was kind of really top of the stretch, I would say, even more so. But it was very interesting to see. And he did gain. He did kind of come on. Did not have enough to catch Arcangelo, who, again, very happy for that group. I thought overall it was an entertaining race, you know, like you said, you know, dead heat for fourth. You don't see that every single day. Bunch of good horses. Thought Angel of Empire was going to be a horse that was, even though I picked Forte because I was on him, I thought Angel of Empire was the horse I was going to kind of be on top of, thinking that he could win, but Arcangelo, great race. Kev?
Yeah, I liked Angel of Empire, but Hit Show and then Angel of Empire were mid-pack the whole way. Mm-hmm. Either one of them made a move. They just sat there, fourth, fifth the whole way. Dead heat. Like you mentioned, the early pace, Tappet Shoes, obviously outclassed. We knew that going in. He finished last. Il Miracolo and Red Route 1 only passed Tappet Shoes. Otherwise, you know, they were never a factor. They were last two positions the whole way around. But yeah, Arcangelo, perfect trip. Castellano had a perfect ride. Stalled appropriately and made the move at the top of the stretch. Got out in front and held off, like I said, held off Forte and Tappet Trice. Impressive win. Coming off the Peter Pan at Belmont.
I had no tickets cashed. I will tell you that. No tickets cashed on this race. However, my mother had the Exacta. How do you like that? Arcangelo Forte for
the
win.
Congratulations to Mama Mignano. Great stuff.
All right. The next winner, we're going to just give a couple of quick mentions to a couple of other winners that happened. In the Champions League, Manchester City beat Inter Milan. Inter Milan played a horrible game. They they're in that defensive style anyway, but they had no offense. Manchester City dominated this game for most of it. They wound up winning the Champions League. They wound up winning the Premier League. They wound up winning the other cup. So they're a triple champion this year, which is pretty amazing. And then on to tennis. Kev, tell us what happened in tennis.
I think just going back to soccer for a minute, I think, you know, I watched a game on Sunday. I think the first time I've watched the UEFA Champions League final. And I think a lot of it was thanks to Ted Lasso.
Hey, there you go. A little Ted Lasso action.
You know, watching them, and, you know, I mean, I thought the line I got from this, from the whole season, I think it was late in season three. So let me get this straight. You're in the English Premier League. You finish last, and you get relegated to the Championship League.
Yep.
You win the Premier League. You go to the Champions League. But you can finish as low as fourth and still make the Champions League. There's European soccer in a nutshell for you.
Kev, that is the most soccer I've ever heard you talk, and I'm very proud of you, buddy.
I disagree with you. Watching that game, Man City was the clear favorite. They beat Real Madrid in the semis. They were a heavy favorite. I thought Inter Milan got Man City to play a little bit in the muck. You know, they were able to play with the defensive style. But they had a couple of golden opportunities. You know, 71st minute, they had the DeMarco header that was off the crossbar, right back to him. Another header that gets blocked by his fellow countryman, Lukaku. And then the 88th minute, Lukaku again, right in front. You know, he's 6 feet away. He's got just a goalie right in front of him. He decides to put the header right into the goalie.
It's some good points, except in the first half, Man City blew like four chances. That game could have been 3-0 at the half based on some of those chances. But
it was nothing.
Listen, there's some good points. There's some good
yeah.
points.
And Lukaku's a world-class finisher, by the way. And he doesn't start in that game. And they don't play until late, right? I mean, so it's I know he's getting older, and I know he's coming off injury, and he doesn't have the fitness. I get the whole thing. But the fact of the matter is, it's the last game. What the hell are you worried about with the fucking fitness? Excuse my language. Get him out there. You're playing for the championship. Yeah. Enough of this babying everybody.
I agree.
Okay, let's move to tennis, Kev. French Open.
Tennis, the French Open. Congratulations. Iga Swiatek wins the third French Open. And I'll be honest, no disrespect to Ms. Swiatek, but who are you?
A woman that apparently plays very well on clay.
You know, that just shows that when there's no Americans involved, we just don't follow it. I mean, on the men's side, we know who the champion is because he's one of the big three. Novak Djokovic wins his third French Open, his 23rd major, passes Nadal for the most ever. Nadal's there at 22. With the third French Open, he now has three-time career Grand Slam. So he has dominated across all the different playing surfaces. Mm-hmm. And I think that gives him – not only does he have one more major now than Nadal, but I think given that breadth of dominance across all of them, Nadal's got 22, but 14 French. He's got eight others. Best clay court player in history, no doubt, but I give the overall edge to greatest of all time to Djokovic at this point. Darren?
Yeah, I mean, you got to remember, he was also suspended from playing in a few tournaments in the last year. I mean, he's one off of the overall record, Margaret Court.
Margaret Court.
24, I think.
Margaret Court, but that includes, but they were saying that also includes open era and amateur era.
I get it, but she's one ahead of Serena. So he's tied with Serena, even if you want to do that. I mean, they took opportunities away from him a little bit with that whole thing. Listen, Djokovic can play. Listen, he looks robotic. He doesn't have a big personality, but most of these tennis guys don't. And you just watch it. I mean, tennis is like a sport that is beyond anything that we grew up watching. Now it's basically every tournament is you know, you're winning at least two tiebreakers in a 3 or 4 or 5 set match. It always comes down to 7-6 in a tiebreaker because these serves, these guys are so huge. 6'5", 6'6", you know, six. I mean, you go to Isner, 6'11", but most guys are 6'5", 6'6". And you know, and they can just hit the ball 140 miles per hour. Nobody can return it. And we go to a tiebreaker almost every time. It's really not as much fun to watch this sport as it once was.
No, I mean, you go back to the extreme example. It was about 12 years ago now with Isner and Mahut. Oh, 76-68 fifth set.
Because nobody can return a serve. Yeah. Isner can't bend, and Mahut couldn't touch anything.
Yeah,
but when we were younger, and I know that maybe because the Americans were more involved, not to downplay it, but when you watch McEnroe play and you watch Connors and you watched even Michael Chang and Agassi and all these guys, they weren't so big and they were running the court. Gerolaitis, Roscoe Tanner, whoever you want to say, it was a very different kind of game. It was a little bit more fun.
It was the old wooden rackets.
Yeah.
We have the technology today where you can miss hit it and still hit a good shot.
Well, yeah, listen, you watch when we get to golf, you watch the movie Tin Cup, saying he's 240 yards away. That's a long shot. I don't know if he could get up over the green when he bets the caddy, you know, when Stadler bets him 240. These guys laugh about that. They take like a 5-iron out now or a 4. It's like because of the technology, it's just a totally different sport. But congrats to the Joker.
Yeah. So real quick.
Wasn't one of your first rackets a wooden racket, Kev?
Oh, yeah, no doubt about it. So Joker halfway to the 23 Grand Slam. He won Australia, he won French, and he'll be, if not the favorite, one of the top 2 or 3 favorites to win Wimbledon because he always plays well there. So could be on our way, possibly calendar Grand Slam.
Okay. And the last of the champions that were crowned last week was Nick Taylor at the RBC Canadian Open. He won it on the third playoff hole on a 72-foot eagle. That's right, a 72-foot eagle on the third playoff hole, beating Tommy Fleetwood. Any comments on that, Kev?
Well, the first Canadian to win the Canadian Open in 70 or 80 years, something like that. But I thought what was the best reaction, his fellow Canadian, Adam Hadwin, decides to come out and celebrate. He's got the bottle of champagne, shakes it up, starts to spray it. And the security guard had no idea who Hadwin was. Comes around the pile and takes him out. My God, I'm waiting for the Jets to sign this guy to a deal as a linebacker. I mean, I don't know if you saw, there was one angle that they showed it from behind Hadwin. And you see the security guard just come. I mean, right, perfect textbook tackle, head up, chin up, right to the chest. I mean, just incredible. I think it's sad that I thought that was the best part of the Canadian Open.
Listen, it was an entertaining tournament. It was a nice tournament, but you were all looking forward to the main course, and the main course is this week, the U.S. Yep. Open.
I'm sorry to interrupt you guys, but did Isaiah Kinnifalefa just steal home plate a little while ago?
He's still home because Raley wasn't looking. Raley's sitting there as a lefty. And kind of like a faking, and he keeps going, and then finally he decides to take off, and he stole it relatively easily. You know, next batter, I'm trying to remember who it is, but got a base hit anyway. I think it was McKinney. But it's 3-1 Yankees at this point.
All right. We're gonna come back to the U.S. Open in a couple of minutes.
You mean the 333 hitting ex Met Billy McKinley?
He's been everywhere,
including the Yankees. Yankees first team.
Yes,
let's talk about some baseball, guys. We got the Subway Series going on right now.
Well, I'll kick it off. I hate the Subway Series. Always have, always will. As a fan, as a Yankee fan, there was never a winning thing about this. Met fans always took it a little bit more seriously. They always took great pride in beating the Yankees. I've always hated this thing. I've hated it with a freaking passion. Now you watch this game. You watch these two teams with 500 plus million in payroll. And the Yankee lineup is horrible. The Mets can't pitch. It's like this is it's really bad. I mean, this is bad baseball right now. You bought tickets for this saying Judge versus Alonso. Neither one playing. The Yankee lineup without Judge is horrible. The Met lineup on Alonzo is passable. It's fine. It's just not, you know, it just misses the guy that if you make a mistake, turns the whole game around. There are very few players in the league right now that you sit there and have to watch them every time they come up. Both of those guys are guys that you do. You know, Shohei is another guy. You know, even this rookie, the kid in Cincinnati, it's kind of fun to watch. Dela Cruz, you want to watch him come up to play. But there's not that many, but each one of these teams has a guy that's just, you want to watch him, and then they're not here in this big series. And basically, like I told you guys before, every Yankee besides Stanton should be batting either 7th, 8th, or 9th in the lineup. There's nobody that can hit on this team. Bowers bats leadoff. Bowers has been discarded by everybody. He's my leadoff hitter. McKinney batting 6th. I mean, there's a bunch of things about this that make you just go nuts. Kind of Falefa, you know, stole home just now. But, you know, it's like, this is a bad lineup. This isn't that much fun. I've never enjoyed the interleague play. I really don't enjoy the Subway Series. And watching it this year is even worse than before. Kev?
I think, you know, the Mets season, I think, has been I always use the term dumpster fire when you think – I don't think dumpster fire is strong enough language. I think there's this I-95 Philadelphia fire for the Mets season right now.
What about your Canadian fire that you started up last
Canadian
week?
Canadian fire.
The Canadian fire. There you go. You know, without Alonzo, you look up and down the lineup and – you know, the kids have leveled off a little bit. You know, the league has caught up to them, you know, Alvarez and Beatty. I don't think Vientos has had a fair chance yet. You know, when he starts, he gets a base hit, and then Bucks hits him for 3 or 4 days, and then he gets another start.
The catcher, Alvarez, still hits, though.
Alvarez, he's impressive. I mean, he still hits home runs.
Yeah, he's impressive.
They finally have him in the middle of the lineup. I mean, why he was batting 2, I have no idea. They finally moved Marte back up today. But you look up and down that lineup, Nimmo's the only guy that's approaching anywhere near his career average. You know, 286, you know, 373, 89 base, 400, you know, slugging. You know, he's pretty much his average career, but, you know, Marte's been down. McNeil's been down. Lindor's been awful hitting 215. You know, the rest of the lineup, you know, Fam and Canada have been doing nice lately. No, together averages up to 240. Yay.
No Judge, no Alonzo. I want the Met lineup more than I want this Yankee lineup. Okay.
I agree, Gino.
You got a couple of kids that can hit the ball. You got some players on this team. Well, I'm telling you right now, because I am tired of seeing this Yankee lineup.
After watching Anthony Volpe last night, I'm ready to take him over Lindor. And that was off of one game, but jeez.
He never bothers me, this kid. I know you don't love him as much as I do, Jake. But I know because he's struggling. I get why. He's hitting 192. I get it. I still think he's exciting. I don't know. He comes to the plate, and I'm rooting for something good. I always think he's going to get a hit. I don't know why. He doesn't, but I always think he is.
How many
more at-bats before we have to make a change to Peraza?
I think last night bought him a couple more weeks at least.
I don't change him at all. He's my shortstop for the entire year. Unless he goes below 150, I play him every day.
Well, it's over 230 at bats, and he's hitting 191.
Okay, so you're telling me the 214 is a lot better, like the rest of the team? Get out of here! It's not like it's dramatic. No, there's a bunch of guys hitting. Nobody's hitting. This guy's better on the base pass, has more pop. And he can produce more runs than Peraza. I'm sorry. I know he's not hitting. What?
You don't know that. You're assuming.
He's got 9 homers. You think Peraza's going to hit 9 in a season? He's not even going to come close.
I don't know.
I do. I do know. He doesn't do it. He's never shown it.
You don't know.
I do know. He's never shown it.
He has not had 230 at-bats up here to see if he can hit better than 191.
I'm not saying he won't hit a higher average. I'm saying he won't produce as many runs and he won't steal as many bases.
He's got 25 runs scored in 230 at-bats. You're making it seem like he's got 50.
He's got 9 homers. He's third out of all rookies in homers. He's got double-digit stolen bases.
I swear you sound like me 15 years ago to the T between the home runs and the stolen bases. It is unbelievable.
I like what this kid brings to the table.
We have switched mentalities like you can't believe.
I don't need another guy that's going to hit 240 on this team with no pop. I got 8 of those. What, I need another one?
I would like to see Peraza up here for 100, 150 at bats and see what he can do.
Fine. That's let him play second base and trade Glaber. I don't care. I don't think this kid out.
Fine. But don't tell me anything. Volpe's hitting 190, Darren.
You act like I didn't say that to start. What do you think? I didn't know.
Is he playing a stellar defense that I haven't seen?
He's been okay. He wasn't been great, but he hasn't been awful.
All right.
I don't know. I don't see any reason to send down a kid that I don't know. I actually like. I don't care if he dips below 150. Yeah, make the move. Otherwise, I keep him the whole year. I don't care what he's hitting.
Well, the 150 could be 2 weeks from now at this rate.
Well, yeah, he had two hits the other night.
Okay.
In a big spot. I'm just saying, the kid can play.
Kev.
Yeah.
Interesting Met trade rumor floating around Twitter today. Yeah. I'd like your opinion, then we'll go to Darren for his opinion. The trade was Beatty, Vientos, and Kevin Parada, the catcher in the minors, to the White Sox for Tim Anderson and Luis Robert.
Robert's young.
Change of scenery for many players. The Mets take a little bit in salary coming their way with two guys who are in contracts. Get rid of some of the younger players. Change it up a little bit. Comments?
Wow. That's actually I'm not upset by that one. When you mentioned Beatty and Vientos, I was ready to be no way. That's at least interesting.
I thought it was interesting when I saw it today. It's floating around. I'm not saying it's in play, but it was definitely floating around Twitter today.
Best player comes to the Mets.
Yeah. And you know me, I've had Robert on my fantasy team before, so I know how good he can be. Anderson's a hitter.
Interesting. It's an interesting one.
Vientos is hard to get a read on. You know, when you look at the scouting reports, you know, there's a bunch of that question whether or not he's got too big a swing, whether there are holes in his swing. And I think right now, because of the lack of playing time, he hasn't been able to get into any sort of rhythm. We don't know what you really have in Vientos. Beatty, we've seen. I think he's going to be a good major league hitter. But I think you've got two better hitters than Beatty there.
Yeah, listen.
And Parada, and you know, when you see Alvarez, I mean, when the scouting report was always he was a little questionable behind the plate, and I know Darren, you think I've overrated a little bit, but I think he's been much more solid behind the plate than we were led to believe he would be.
See, I was hoping that for the seventh week in a row, you'd bring up that he frames the ball well. And then he's solid. He is solid. He's good. He's fine. He's
fine behind the plate.
He's adequate. We'll go with adequate.
He's not a butcher back there.
No, he's certainly not. He's not Gary Sanchez. I agree.
No, he's not Gary Sanchez. Even though Gary Sanchez has hit a couple of home runs for the Padres.
And Ted, that's what you want to start the game tonight, baby. Anyway.
Yeah. Wow. That
I would make the trade the heartbeat, but here's my only drawback. And I'm going to point out Lindor to go along with Alomar, to go along with Baerga, and throw in Tim Anderson, as the Mets have had nothing but monstrous success with American League Central middle infielders coming over and really tearing it up. I mean, Alomar came from Toronto, to be fair, but he started in Cleveland. Yeah. You know, but at the same time, these guys from the Midwest that come over to the Mets don't seem to hit here, and I don't get why. I don't understand it. It's just like a curse.
Interesting. Interesting little rumor today. That's
very
all.
Interesting rumor.
I would do the trade if I were the Mets, by the way. I would do the trade. I think Robert's the best player in the trade, and he's young enough. And you know what? I don't know. I think Beatty's going to be really good. I just don't know.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other baseball tidbits?
The hottest. Should we talk about the hottest team in baseball right now?
What, Oral Roberts?
Well, from the professional first, I was going to go Oakland Athletics.
Well, they've been winning games, finally. Now
seven
that Nevada
in a row.
Has passed the resolution that they're going to be able to move in.
They will not challenge the Mets for the 62 Mets.
unless they fall apart again.
Unless they really fall apart. But wow, that seven game winning streak came out of nowhere. But otherwise, they've got nothing else for baseball.
Impressive stuff. I mean, I have a little bit on college, but nothing on the pros.
Yep.
Go ahead.
You mentioned Oral Roberts.
Well, here's the thing. College baseball. You know, so we're down to eight. Okay, and I'm sorry to Kev. You know, I was rooting for your Gamecocks. They got swept by Florida. So the interesting thing this weekend is there were eight super regionals, which is a best of three series. Okay, four of them were sweeps. All right, Wake swept Alabama. Florida swept South Carolina. You know, you had LSU sweeping Kentucky, and you had who's the fourth one? I'm sorry. There was another TCU swept Indiana State. But the other four series went three. The interesting thing is that every team that won those series lost game one. So Duke beat Virginia. Oregon beat Oral Roberts. It was kind of cool to see the comebacks happen the way it happened. Stanford got through as well. So, I thought that it was cool that all the other teams lost their first game and they had to come back and win two. Oral Roberts is an incredible story, though, if you look at them. They're 52-12. At one point in the season, they were 10-8. They've just been amazing. That includes a 21-game winning streak, during the season. They were two outs away from being eliminated. They were down to Oregon in game two in the ninth. Came back, won game two, and then they won game three, kind of going away. But again, hottest team in the league right now. One of only three four seeds to ever make it this far. Four seeds in a regional that they got all the way through. Stony Brook did it back, I think, in 08 or 09. And I'm trying to remember who the other one was. I know Stony Brook was one of them, though. But only three teams have gotten all the way through from that level back. So really impressive, Oral Roberts, in the way it was. One of the sad things that happened, unfortunately, for Indiana State, they were going to host their first Super Regional. And because they had the Special Olympics in town, there was no hotel rooms. So they had to play that series at TCU. TCU ended up sweeping Indiana State because apparently Terre Haute is a hotbed for the Special Olympics. I felt bad for the Indiana State kids. But the Special Olympics, the TCU fans donated $25,000 to the Special Olympics because of what was happening. So they got it. Good so job. They did something nice. But at the same point in time, you feel bad for the kids because Indiana State deserved the home series, did not get it. They had to go to Fort Worth, and they got swept. And despite Kevin's feeling that TCU is a mid-major, they would argue with you that they are a big squad.
They're mid-major. Come on. We remember them from the Mountain West.
No, I agree. So we're down to our final eight, and it should be pretty cool. It should be a good series. I support Wake. You guys know that, so I'm hoping that they get through. They hit nine homers in the clincher against Alabama to win 22-5. G, back to you.
They've got Stanford in the first matchup here.
Yep, they start off with Stanford. Absolutely, they do.
Okay, starting tomorrow in golf is the U.S. Open from Los Angeles Country Club. Kev, why don't you start us off with a little information?
Well, the L.A. Country Club, which has not hosted a PGA Tour event since 1940, even before my time. That's how long ago it was. The first U.S. Open there, obviously. So it's a course that's going to be unknown to a lot of players. A few of them have played there before. One of the interesting ones I thought was Max Homa has played there. First round of the 2013 Pac-12 Championship. Not the Pac-10. It was the Pac-12 back then. He said the course record that still stands with a 9-under-61. So obviously, he's fine playing the course. Interesting layout. There are five par threes and three par fives to get you to par 70. Two of the longest par threes in open history. There's a 284-yard seventh and a 290-yard 11th. So those are going to take some big-time shots. I mean, we're looking at those yardages going, oh, that's a nice little par four. Maybe we could get a par on those. And the pros are sitting there going, yeah, we've got a somehow finagle a three on these holes. The other par three, which could be interesting, is the 15th. That could play as low as 78 yards. And some of these pros are sitting up there going, you know, you give me a lob wedge on a tee, you know, if depending on exactly how that green is situated, you know, you hit a lob wedge, and the way these guys can spin the ball, you don't know where the ball might wind up, depending on where the hole's located, if you get it down to 78 yards. So it could be, that could be very interesting. There's also a drivable par four, the sixth hole. So that sets up another interesting hole as well. So I think this is going to be a real shot maker's U.S. Open.
Yeah, apparently the fairways are pretty wide, deceptively wide. Yep. The bunkers are rough here, from what I understand. Again, this is a course that was kind of known for being very racist, not allowing minorities to play on it up not that long ago, to be honest with you. I think the 80s. When it kind of started to change, it was very exclusive. They have a north and a south course. They're playing the north, which is a little bit more challenging, apparently. But it's going to be all about angles. It's going to be all about, you know, where you land the ball on that green. That's really going to be the key to this. And on the fairway, to be honest with you. You say that it's deceptively long. The greens are big. We're going to listen. None of us have ever seen anything on this course. And Max Homan, who you mentioned, always plays well in California. Anyway.
Yep.
I do also like that we have a West Coast tournament going on this time. So we're going to see some golf in prime time for a change now. So it should be interesting. Darren?
I like it. I like it a lot. I always like the West Coast. I like it when they play Chambers Bay. I like it when they play Torrey Pines. I like it when they, you know, when they play Pebble Beach. You know, it's I was looking up at there's a close tag play on the Met Yankee game, so I was looking up to see if they got Nimmo or not, who finds a way to lean into every pitch he possibly can. I think Nimmo got back in safely, by the way. So we'll see if that play is over or reviewed or not. But yeah, the Mets and the Yankees in a doozy of mediocre baseball at the same time. Oh, it's close. It's real close.
If you're plucky, if you haven't used your challenge yet, you have to use the seventh inning.
You have to use it. Yeah, I think he's safe. I think he technically beats it. I don't know if I'm wrong, but oh, it's so close. It's so close. You got to challenge it. Anyway, I'm sorry. I know this is not what we're supposed to be talking about.
Two outs, ground ball. Why is Vance was not scoring on that play?
Because he can't run. He runs like you do, Kev. Runs like I do. Runs like Gino does.
I mean,
but he's like 30 years young. That's the difference.
Nimmo's got to be thinking Vance was going home. That's why he's going to third. Anyway, I digress.
Of course. Yeah, no, exactly. Right, we got caught up watching it.
Back to the US Open.
Again, it should be an interesting tournament. You know, guys, I mean, Koepka's been great in all year in these majors. Scheffler seems to be, you know, getting his game back. Rahm is really good. Guys, I'm looking at, you know, a bit, just so you know, I think Cantlay could have a nice tournament here. I expect Max Homa was a guy I had written down. He always plays well out there. And Justin Rose is the kind of guy that really knows how to spin the ball real well. And I think he could be a guy that could do some damage. I don't know if you guys have any other guys you're looking at.
My pick to win it?
Yep.
Victor Hovland.
You're going with Victor. Okay.
I'm going with Victor. He won the Memorial, second of the PGA, tied for seventh of the Masters, tied for third of the Players. He's that close to winning his first major. I think this is when he does it. He's playing way too well to not do it now.
Okay, I'm always – whenever I'm looking at these and I try to pick winners or top tens, I'm always looking at Rahm. I'm always looking at Koepka, so especially the way Koepka's playing. But let's pull back from that a minute. So, Darren, you mentioned Cantlay.
Yep.
You could have Cantlay at plus 1,600 to win the tournament, plus 170 to finish in the top 10. That's not bad.
Nope.
Justin Rose in the top 10 is plus 360. You like that?
I do. What about Max Homa?
Max Homa in the top 10 is plus 280.
I think that's a gimme.
I think that's a bet I really like.
Yeah.
And not just because he played the tournament before. He just has been so good in California.
Yeah.
Kev, you mentioned Victor Hovland, plus 1,800 to win the tournament, plus 180 to finish in the top 10. I'll give you a couple I like, and you guys know how I like to approach this. I like to pick a couple of guys to finish in the top 10. Rather than picking a winner, that way if I hit two or three, maybe I pull some money in. Rahm is plus 105. Koepka is plus 130. I like Colin Morikawa at plus 300. We're going to see if he's okay. I know he had an issue this week. And Xander Schauffele, plus 180 to finish in the top 10. I like that one. But here are my – let me give you a couple of long shots. Patrick Reed, plus 8,000 to win, plus 600 to finish in the top 10. Russell Henley and Joaquin Niemann to finish in the top 10, plus 650. I like those two names for this tournament. But here's a couple of the bets I like, and that is it's a combination of two golfers both to finish in the top 10. Rahm and Koepka, plus 360. Rahm and Scheffler, plus 250. And Darren, here's one for you because I actually like this one. Xander Schauffele and Max Homa, plus 900 to both finish in the top 10.
I like that one too, bud.
Yep.
Okay. And then just because it seems to be the two names that are always out there, if you take Koepka and Scheffler right now, it's plus 275.
You know what's interesting? That none of us have mentioned Rahm or McIlroy much.
I'm just going to say Rory.
I did. Rahm, that's who I started.
Rahm, you mentioned.
Oh, you mentioned Rahm. I'm sorry. I must have missed that.
I know Rory was a name that none of us had mentioned yet.
Yeah, so I didn't mention him, but he's plus 1,600 to win the tournament, plus 150. By the way, the only two golfers that are plus less than 1,000 to win, just to be the outright winner, is Scottie Scheffler plus 600 and John Rahm at plus 900. Everybody else is plus more than 1,000 to win the tournament. So if you do like one of those guys and you want to throw 10 bucks on it, 20 bucks on it, that's not a bad return. And, you know, if Rory at plus 1,600 is not a bad bet at all, you know.
I agree with you, pal. Should be an interesting tournament. I always love watching the U.S. Open, the Masters and the U.S. Open on my – I guess I watch the Open a little bit more because the Masters sometimes is right around Easter where it gets a little harder for me. But still, I always look forward to Father's Day every year to watch my Open on Sunday.
I was going to say, the Father's Day gift to me is just leave me alone and let me watch a Sunday of the U.S. Open. That's all I want for Father's Day.
No, I got you. I try to catch it. And the late start helps me. I go visit Dad, and then I can get home and watch the majority of it, which helps me a lot.
It's two ways. It's that one, and I like the British because that's sort of like Sunday morning. You can get up, watch TV, and then you've got the rest of the day. It's over usually by 12 or 1 o'clock. So you're not killed the whole day Sunday.
As I try to control the TV against bubble guppies on a Sunday morning, it's not easy for me. I do the best I can. I don't mind the British. The thing about the British is there's always some players I don't really know. The leaderboard to me is always best. I think that Masters in the U.S. always have the best leaderboards. Now, it hasn't been this year. PGA had a great leaderboard, I thought, so it was pretty interesting. We'll see. We'll see how it all puts together, but I'm pumped up for it.
I want to just throw one more thing at you guys, and that is this is a little baseball point before we head out, I think. The Angels are 38-31 at the moment. They're 7 games over. It may put the squash on an Ohtani trade before the deadline if they are in this wild card hunt, which now, right now, they are. They're only one game out of the wild card. So just a point as we get through it, because if this team was 10 under 500 at this point, the Ohtani rumors would already be flowing all over the place. So
the cool thing is, I think we all want to see Ohtani and Trout playing in the playoffs. You want to see what that dynamic part of a lineup can do. I know Trout's gotten older. He's not the same player he once was, but still, you know, you feel like you missed that guy's entire career because he never made the playoffs.
Yeah.
I would like to see one of them on the East Coast, I'll tell you.
Make it easier to watch him.
Listen, even if it was Trout, I'd love to see Trout a little bit more than what we see him. The 10:30 starts are tough sometimes, and, you know, but we'll see what happens.
Absolutely. Well,
what's going to be interesting is they're 4.5 behind Texas right now. And I know Texas has played, except for the 6 starts, they've played without DeGrom all year, but psychologically, does losing DeGrom Are the Texas Rangers playing over their head, or are they this for real this way, and they're going to stay battling for that division lead?
One point on that, Corey Seager is playing out of this world at this moment. He's hitting about 360. He's hitting for pop. He's doing everything that you could possibly do. The lineup is playing real good. We said at the beginning of the year, Bochy's a difference maker as a manager. The fact that Jacob DeGrom bobblehead day is June 16th, I'm sure people are racing to get their guy who had a couple of starts. That's pretty exciting. I think the Rangers are good. I think the Rangers are better than they get credit for. I think the Angels, Ward is starting to hit a little bit. Urshel is one of those glue kind of guys. You got the two stars in the middle, and one of those two stars also pitches like a madman. There's a lot of things to like about this Angel squad. I think that they have a legit shot of making the playoffs this year. I think the Mariners will come on. I think that whole division's very close.
It's going to be interesting. The top four there and the entire AL East. Boston's fading maybe just a pinch here. They're under 500, but you've got about eight teams between the East and West for – what is it, five spots? Three wild cards?
It's six playoff teams.
Right, but one's a Central Division winner.
Yes.
So it's eight for the other five.
Yes.
Yep. If you want to include Boston, that's nine for five. That's what you're looking at.
Yeah, I mean, in baseball, any team could go on that seven-game winning streak. The Oakland A's just did.
The Oakland A's have done it to claw their way back to 23.5 out.
Crazy.
Unbelievable.
I want to just hit you guys with something. So it's been a full week, basically, and we've heard no chatter coming out of PGA Live, whatever the new entity is. Blah 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 blah. Any comments on that, guys?
Well, I think they just rushed this thing to get it in before the tournament. Why I'm blanking on his name, Jay? What's his last name? Monahan's he got sick.
He took a leave of absence, rumors,
which I think also puts a little bit of a hold on a couple of things.
Yep.
I don't think any of the details are coming out on this for a while. Dustin Johnson said something today about he expects to have a full live tour next year. We'll see. Yeah, I just want to see the good players playing each other. That's all I want to see.
Boy, that's a name we didn't mention in the U.S. Open preview, too.
Well, Dustin Johnson, despite making all this money at LIV, has not really been impressive.
He did win last month on their LIV tour in Oklahoma. And
thousands of people watched it, and it was pretty exciting.
And he's got all three fans that watch it in the U.S.
Yeah, pretty much. It's a tough tournament.
They heard he was in it and were hoping to catch Ms. Gretzky there.
Who doesn't want to see it? So you guys have any other points? Anything else? I'm going to hold off on that college basketball point the next week. We don't need it now because we have a lot less to talk about, I think, next week than we do this week. Anyway, we are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Darren here with Kevin, here with Gino, talking about the wonderful world of sports. Please download the podcast anywhere you get your podcast, whether it be an Apple product, TuneIn, Spotify, whatever you like. We post some things periodically on Facebook, stuff like that, social media with Instagram as well. If you see it, like it, share it. Tell us what you want to hear about. Tell us what you don't want to hear about. But we hope that you enjoy listening to the show as much as we enjoy coming and doing it there every week and producing it for you guys. So without any further ado, may your sports be with you.